Welcome back to the BS of the Sun podcast. This is Jim Kochenour, and we're going to go with a little bit of a change of pace this week. And I've got Keith Chisola with me this week. He's done a bunch of the Summer League coverage for the site, and he also does weekly Solar Flares posts. He does a lot of good work for the site, and we're going to bring him on this week. This is his debut on the podcast. Keith, how are you doing tonight?
Doing well, Jim. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so let's get right into some of this Summer League coverage. You were very involved in this, along with Kellen, did a really great job on it. And what I want to go into, obviously, is focus on the players that are going to play roles on the Suns team this coming year. Obviously, we had a lot of other guys on the roster. A couple of them, like James, made a decent impact and had a good showing for themselves. But I think what most Suns fans are looking at when they're watching these Summer League games, obviously, are Archie Goodwin, Devin Booker, TJ Warren, and Alex Len. So instead of just going down one at a time, how about I ask you first, which one of those four do you think was the most impressive?
Okay, I'll answer that a couple of different ways. The most impressive was TJ Warren. And despite what you may have heard from Isaiah Thomas during the broadcast, I think he's pretty safe for a roster spot. I know Isaiah Thomas was saying during the broadcast he wasn't sure if TJ Warren was going to get a roster spot. TJ looked really, really good in a lot of different ways, but I don't think that answer would surprise anyone. Devin Booker really impressed me. After every game, Coach Nate was talking about some of the things that Devin Booker does besides his shot. You know, the narrative has always been that Suns took Devin Booker for the shot, that he's the best shooter in the draft, things like that. And actually, he started off really cold. You know, he missed his first 8 three-pointers at Summer League, and then he finished something like 12 of 22 the rest of the time. But he's really, at times on the court, he looked like he was the veteran. Especially when they would get down early. There was a lot of games during the Summer League where they dug great big holes in the first quarter and had to come out of that. Guy really hustles, plays good defense. I was more impressed with his ball handling than, say, Archie Goodwin. And, you know, I know that he can be a very polarizing figure to Suns fans, but I think TJ is the easy answer, but then Devin Booker really impressed, you know, his first handful of games.
One thing that I like to watch for in Summer League is from the returning players. So obviously Devin Booker doesn't qualify for this, but with Goodwin, Warren, and Len, is things that they have been working on, some of the shortcomings from their game, their deficiencies that they have been trying to shore up. And I don't know that I saw enough of that this summer that I would have liked to. With TJ Warren, for instance, his long-range shooting, he wasn't even attempting three-point shots. So it wasn't even an opportunity to see whether or not he could make them. He just wasn't even attempting them. Archie Goodwin, it still seemed like he was more of a point A to point B line drive type of player. I didn't see some of the new wrinkles that I would like to. Did you see anything out of either of these guys individually or collectively that did impress you?
You know, off the top of my head, I don't have a good answer for that. I do want to touch on something that you just said, though, about Archie Goodwin and sort of being point A to point B. That's something that was a little bit frustrating, was the decision-making, driving into traffic, leaving his feet without knowing what he's going to do with the ball. I saw a lot of that, and now, to his credit, he did get to the free throw line by far more than any other Sun, and depending on who you talk to, they'll say that that aggressiveness helps him get to the line. Now, I can just as easily put the spin on it that getting to the line is what bails out that recklessness. So that was something that was a little more frustrating. I will say Alex Len, you know, he was up until that last game, he was the leading rebounder at Summer League. So that was obviously a positive, him not getting hurt. Of course, that was a positive as well. And I agree with you. I would have liked to see TJ Warren show a little bit more from behind the arc. You know, inside the arc, he was scoring in a variety of ways, and it's a summer league. So to take a lot of threes and miss them, I don't think that's a big deal. And in fact, that was what I was looking for from Devin Booker. If he missed a lot of threes, that's not the end of the world. It's important that he gets the opportunity to take a lot, plenty of shots on the NBA level. But T.J. Warren only took 4 threes. I agree with you. I would like to see a little bit more of that.
Alex Len out there, a couple of things with him. First of which is with the Summer League, not all of these guys are NBA players. About, you know, 25%, 30% of these guys maybe are actual NBA players. The rest of them are guys trying to make rosters. But Alex Len definitely seems to look the role in terms of an NBA center because he's just bigger and longer and more imposing than all of these guys out there. Did you get that same impression that Alex Len was just on another level in terms of his physical skill set and his imposing presence out there? And also with Alex, were you concerned at all with the fact that the Suns did hold him out of some games? They're saying it's just precautionary, not even necessarily precautionary, that they're just kind of holding him out. There's no injury concern, anything like that. But wouldn't you maybe just prefer to see him play in all the games?
I would. And for what it's worth, we asked Coach Nate that after, you know, every game where he didn't play or he played limited minutes. And he did not make a big deal out of it at all. We would have liked to see him a little bit more. But as far as him really looking more like an NBA player than his peers at Summer League, I agree, he did. And I think it's easier to see that with the big guys underneath the basket in the front court. You can definitely tell a difference in the skill set, sometimes in the size. It's easier to distinguish those players than it is with the backcourt and the guards. There's a lot of very talented guards at Summer League, but there were very few players like Alex Len. And I think you saw that with the way that he was able to rip down as many boards as he did. There's not a lot of players like Alex Len who are at Summer League.
T.J. Warren, we just touched on the lack of his outside shooting during the Summer League. I had talked with Dave about this recently, and I think that one of the Suns' Achilles heels this upcoming season, one thing that may really stunt their growth as a team is the lack of three-point shooting. They don't have a whole lot of plus three-point shooters on the roster. And it seems to me that if T.J. Warren is going to be effective on the court, they're going to need to have other strong three-point shooters around him because it's hard to have a small forward out there that isn't a three-point threat at all. Even P.J. had to develop that corner three-point shot to keep from being a complete offensive liability. What do you think T.J., what do you think his value is on the court and in the offense without that three-point shot?
Just because of the way the game's played today, it's significantly diminished. I mean, I think a three-point shot is definitely something that he needs. It's, you know, and that's just the way that the game is today. A player on another team is playing in TJ's position. As far as that team being successful, you need to get some production from behind the arc. So what we saw at Summer League is not necessarily indicative of what the kind of shots that TJ will get during regular NBA season play. You know, it's, you need the three-point shot to be able to open up those other shots. So I think the lack of an outside threat from TJ Warren is definitely a major liability for the Suns.
In your Solar Flares article, the first link that you have there was to a David Thorpe article on ESPN.com that was talking about Devin Booker's performance at the Summer League there. I think that you'd have to classify Devin Booker's Summer League debut performance as an A performance. You couldn't have expected much better. He got off to a little bit of a slow start, but then he really came on and was very impressive throughout the rest of the play. What was your overall take on Booker's time there at the Summer League? And also, what is your thought about the possibility of him even beating out Archie Goodwin on the depth chart this coming season?
Well, like I said earlier, he Devin Booker missed his first 8 three-pointers at Summer League. And I'll tell you what, had he missed his first 10 or 12, that wouldn't have necessarily been a big deal to me. I think it's only important that he takes a lot of shots. You know, kind of going back to T.J. Warren, it's somewhat of a similar deal in that you just want to see what you're working with leading into the season and get these guys a lot of opportunities. I had no problem with the slow start because of everything else that we saw, the defense, the leadership. You know, I said earlier at times he looked like the veteran on the court, very athletic. And after the games, you know, coach was talking about all these things and praising all these things. So I was very impressed with that. I think there is definitely a possibility that he's able to beat someone on the depth chart. Obviously, there's a lot of criticisms going on with Archie Goodwin. I'm not as down on Archie as some other people are, but if Devin Booker is able to add an element to the Suns, you know, we talked about the three-point shooting being an issue, T.J. Warren not being able to hit those threes. If he's able to add that element, you know, he has significantly more value than Archie Goodwin. So I think that's definitely a possibility as the season progresses.
That's kind of the way I see it. It's really easy to be effusive in the praise of Booker from this summer league, but at the same point, he's only 18 years old, so there's a very minimal chance that he's going to play more than a bit role in the upcoming season. But if he can come in and shoot three-pointers and not really hurt the team in other areas, then that might be enough to earn some spot minutes. If Goodwin, if Weems, if some of these other guys have trouble making that three-point shot a threat for the offense, then that could really be his opening. And that's a big question mark, I think, as the season comes on. And we'll be able to look at that in training camp when some of these guys in the preseason games will get out there, I'm sure, for some time. And we'll see whether Goodwin, whether Weems, some of these guys can hit these three-point shots out there, because it's really just an unknown at this point.
Jim, I'll tell you something else real quick, just piggybacking on what you said. You got to consider who Devin's playing behind as well. You know, if he was playing behind somebody else, we may have a little bit of a different take on it, but that he's playing behind Archie Goodwin, who the expectation, you know, he's not hit the expectation of the team or of a lot of fans. And again, I can't stress enough that I'm not as down on Archie Goodwin as some other people are, but you bring in Devin Booker, I think Devin Booker has a greater opportunity to maybe get more minutes because of who he's playing behind. I think Coach Hornacek would be a little bit quicker to make that move because of sort of Archie Goodwin not meeting the expectations. And you got to consider if Devin Booker is exercising good decision-making on the court and things like that, that's one of the major criticisms about Archie Goodwin. So it might not even be just hitting the threes. It might be somebody who can handle the ball, hit the occasional three-pointer, and not turn the ball over as much, you know. So
just to call a spade too, and this you might be pointed to as my pessimistic nature, but for opposing teams fans and for fans of the Phoenix Suns that aren't maybe dedicated enough to be watching summer league games, the fans on our site might feel pretty good about the bench with Weems, Goodwin, Booker, and Ronnie Price there. But these casual fans, and I think rightly so, are probably sitting there like, who the hell are Sonny Weems, Archie Goodwin, Devin Booker, and Ronnie Price? You know, none of these guys can play basketball. I've never heard of any of these guys. None of them have ever done anything. And, that's pretty much true, except in the case of Ronnie Price, we know what we can expect from him, which is, you know, practically nothing. So, you know, hopefully things will turn out better, but like you said there, there's an opportunity, but it's only because of a potential dearth of talent. And
Absolutely. And it's, and I'll tell you what, as far as not knowing the players, you give me five players I never heard of that can bring the Suns to the playoffs, and that's fine with me. So I realize that some of the acquisitions might not have necessarily made the splash that some fans may have wanted, but you got to consider, you know, do you want a splashy free agent signing, or do you want to put the pieces in place to make the team a playoff team?
Your overall impression of the summer league session for the Suns, do you think what kind of grade do you give them? What do you think that the team thought of their performance? Did they accomplish their goals going into the summer league?
If you ask the team, team's gonna say A. I'd give it a B plus. I'd give it a B plus. Only because I can be a little pessimistic too, not necessarily as pessimistic as you, but I don't want to give A's out, that freely. But because and I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why. Because I didn't see the only thing that holds it back from being an A, I didn't see the growth that I wanted to see from Archie Goodwin and those deficiencies with PJ Warren. If we're talking about player grades, I'd give Devin Booker an A. He definitely shined at Summer League. And the other reason that I hold off from giving the team an A at Summer League is those slow starts in the first quarter. When they were sloppy, they were real sloppy. Now, I was very impressed with their way to come back in some of these games, but too many turnovers. Poor ball handling a lot of times. But overall, look, they went to championship game, so I'm still giving the team a B plus. Ball stopped just short of an A.
I think you have to stop just short of an A because they did lose to the Spurs, and sprinkles are for winners. So no sprinkles for the Suns in the summer league there. But
Right.
after I maybe cast a little bit of doubt on the Suns bench, especially in the backcourt, one thing that we talked about right before we came on that you posited a question to me about, which is with respect to a different question mark coming into the season for the Suns, and hopefully one we'll learn a little bit more about heading into training camp here when players start reporting for the off-season workouts and stuff, is the status of Markieff Morris, who hasn't been in touch with at least General Manager Ryan McDonough and Coach Jeff Hornacek. He has perhaps talked to other people within the organization, at least passingly, but I think that he is a big question mark coming into the season based off of his brother being traded, everything that happened this past season. What do you think about the Markieff Morris's situation and I guess maybe the second July moratorium that the Suns are encountering right now?
If Archie Goodwin is the number one disputed topic on Brightside, then I think Markieff Morris might be number two. I just everybody seems to fall into a different camp on this. I think he's a knucklehead, and he is an extraordinarily talented player. But I've said this more than once, he is not talented enough to justify some of that behavior. Now, a lot of people are going to argue that. Different environment, a vastly different team. His brother's obviously not there anymore. I think he's got to be moved, and I understand you have to get some value in that move when you do that because he is so talented. But if we are waiting for Markieff Morris, if we're waiting for his behavior to change, what has happened since the season ended that leads anybody to think next season will be any different? If anything, in my opinion, it would be worse. He hadn't been talking with anybody. Now, granted, that goes both ways. I don't know that anybody's been, reached out to Markieff Morris. But there's obviously not been a lot of communication there. His brother leaves and goes to Detroit and has some unpleasant things to say about the Suns when he gets there. The team has done a lot of work in the off season, as far as taking those steps to make the playoffs. Right steps, wrong steps, who knows? At least an effort is being made. And the worst thing would be if we got the right pieces in place, it's a playoff team, and we can't get over this knucklehead behavior, all the technical fouls, issues with the coaching staff and the fans and things like that. I just think it's too he's too much of a liability. And if we're not going to make the playoffs, if this team's not going to get better, I feel better knowing that a lot of effort was made, but I feel terrible if it's a team that could have taken that extra step, but behavioral issues, whatever you want to call it, was what held the team back.
What we don't know is whether the Suns have actually tried to even move Markieff Morris. The problem, like you said, is, and I'm maybe not even in agreement with you that Markieff is an extraordinarily talented player. He's a good player. He's a good player. He's not an all-star. He's not even a borderline all-star. I don't think he'll ever be a borderline all-star. But he's a good player. But you have this situation, and you can't dump him for nothing like you did with his brother, because obviously the Suns can't have Mirza Teletovic and John Lu are manning the four for him this season. So they have to find some way to get a starting quality four back in a trade somehow. And it seems hard to imagine that you're just going to be able to swap straight up with him and bring somebody back like that. So they might have to be more creative if they're trying to construct a trade for something like that. Obviously, they wouldn't have had any problem ditching him in a salary move, something like that. If they could have gotten LaMarcus Aldridge, then Markieff Morris wouldn't be a Phoenix Sun anymore. But in terms of whether he can, you know, turn the corner, mature, I don't see why there's any reasonable expectation for that to happen. What based off of his track record would lead someone to believe that this is going to be a reason why he's going to change? Instead, what's happened this summer is, after the litany of problems last season, the Suns ditched his brother for absolutely nothing. Then, like you had mentioned, you alluded to, his brother goes on and at the press conference shows that his feelings are still hurt, that feels like the Suns betrayed him, that he took a discount so that he could try to play with his brother. And if Marcus is saying these things, then you know that Markieff feels the exact same way. These guys share a brain. So you can tell exactly what Markieff's position is from Marcus's position. Markieff doesn't have to talk to the Suns. We already know what's going on there. And so the problem is can the Suns really afford to have Markieff going into the season as a potential disaster waiting to happen? Because if this guy reports with hurt feelings and this turns into another debacle like the Suns had a series of last year, then they could really undermine, like you said, a lot of the positive momentum that they made in the culture change. Because right now, other than Markieff, I don't see any of the potential pitfalls that the Suns had last year where everything melted down. So I think that they got some good character guys and some good veteran guys in. And the one huge question mark is Markieff Morris.
Absolutely, absolutely. And you know what? Look, we're not going to get – and let me point out, I call him an extraordinary talent. It is – I think he's very talented, but – not as talented as maybe he could be on the court. And a lot of this has to do with his behavioral issues. There's no reason to think that things are going to get better. What do you think the conversation between Marcus and Markieff Morris is like? Do you really think that Marcus is talking to Markieff and saying, well, I'm going to do my thing in Detroit, and I know you'll be successful in Phoenix. You guys got a good team there. I really think you got a playoff team. Of course not. He's saying terrible things. Markieff is probably agreeing with him. I have trouble getting to the point where, based on what has happened in the offseason, Markieff has said, well, I'm basically starting over. My brother's not here. I've got to focus on making my game better. I've got to focus on helping get this team to the playoffs. We're not going to get comparable. We're not going to get equal value in a trade. But I'm okay with that if it means, to use a cliche, if it means we're bringing in somebody who's a good locker room guy, a good glue guy. It's kind of hard to quantify that, but that can make it a little more palatable to get maybe a lesser talent.
Markieff and Marcus, I can almost guarantee you that the thought process between them is that I can't believe they, as in the Phoenix Suns, did this to us, as in the brothers. I can guarantee you that they haven't moved on and said, you know what, we really squandered our opportunity and it's time for us to grow up. And you know what, the Phoenix Suns were right to split us up. And, you know, we really let the Suns down. I guarantee you that that's not what's happening there. That's not the conversation. So
I'd love to hear that story, but that's not the conversation.
Yeah, that would be nice. Another thing, it's actually the next topic in your solar flares involving the Suns' puzzling handling of brothers, was the Zoran Dragic, who's now a Boston Celtic, formerly a member of the Miami Heat and formerly a member of the Phoenix Suns, who was obviously brought in a form of nepotism in a way to try to placate assuage Goran Dragic and maybe try to help keep him around in free agency, keep him happy, and that backfired monumentally. And so it doesn't seem like the Suns have had much luck with this pairing brothers type of strategy. Do you think the Suns have kind of learned their lesson with this stuff? You had the growing pains of the front office with Ryan McDonough coming on, but there have been plenty of mishaps, I think. Even though there's been a lot of positive change, there have been quite a few stumbling blocks along the way, and I think that Zoran Dragic thing is another prime example of one.
Yeah, I agree. And you know what, for what it's worth, I don't often hear stories about brothers working together and it goes really well. I know I could never work with my brother. It's I can appreciate the move. I can appreciate that the Suns are being creative as far as doing new and different things. Because 2 years ago, we were so close to the playoffs, and it felt like it just took one little tweak to go ahead and make that extra move to get into the playoffs. So I can appreciate that they were not complacent with getting that close. But I think after this has happened twice with the brothers, maybe that's a strategy that needs to that we need to go ahead and abandon. But I'll tell you what, as far as the offseason, all these different moves that are being made, they always give you something to talk about, the Suns do. So I can definitely appreciate that. It keeps things interesting in July.
Maybe the tie that binds can be the Kentucky Wildcat alumni situation. Instead of actual blood relations, they can just be a band of brothers from their collegiate alma mater instead. So we've got a lot of Kentucky Wildcats on the Suns. And maybe
you know what? That sounds, to me, that's, for better or worse, to me, that's much more logical than the brother thing. Because with the brother thing, what I was always more concerned with was that the game would just focus around those two and sort of forgetting about the teammates. I think that's the risk that you would run with something like that. Now, obviously, these guys weren't always on the court a whole lot together, but I think the Kentucky thing makes, if we're talking about, you know, different strategies to use to be successful, that makes a lot more sense to me than the brothers thing.
Well, and with the NBA factory that Kentucky is, I think that if the Suns just focus a strategy on drafting a player out of Kentucky with their first-round pick every season, I don't think you can go wrong with that, with the level of players that Kentucky has put into the NBA in recent years. So
absolutely.
Jumping around a little bit here now, the Summer League Championship, the San Antonio Spurs beat the Suns. Obviously, that never gets old for the Suns, losing to the Spurs at just about anything. They're kind of like our big brother that just beats us at everything, and we just can't quite catch up to them. One day, hopefully, if the Suns drink enough milk, they can get to the point where they're not being bullied anymore. But Becky Hammon spearheaded that championship run for the Spurs. And just today it was announced, actually, that another female coaching landmark was announced with the Arizona Cardinals. They have brought in Jen Welter to be kind of an assistant coach doing the linebackers. And to me, what it kind of struck me, and I know these are landmark moves, and not to downplay the significance, but to me, it seems weird in a way that this is such news still, and that this hasn't already progressed to this point where it is commonplace. Because I kind of hear the stuff, and it's almost like, well, wow, we haven't gotten to that point already. You'd figure that this would already be common, that women would be integrated into these roles already. So I'm not trying to downplay the achievement, but it just seems like with this type of social progress, that sports are really behind the times in terms of the social climate in America.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And it's something that shouldn't be news. And I'll tell you this, it especially shouldn't be news in the NBA, in my opinion. And Becky Hammon, she's going to get a head coaching job. If for no other reason, and she's a fantastic coach, but she's going to get a head coaching job. If for no other reason, then there's so many bad coaches in the NBA, and it seems like they all get recycled all the time. And I got this buddy that lives in California. He's a diehard Golden State Warriors fan. And anytime there's a head coaching change in the NBA, there was this running joke between the two of us. We'd say, did you see so-and-so got a new coach? And we'd always say the same three names. We'd say, Larry Brown, Rick Adelman, PJ Carlesimo. It just seems like so many of these different names, even today, they just get recycled. And she's won. You know, you can tell me that it's summer league, but she's done some winning now on the NBA level. So I think it's, and I don't think it's that far off either. I think this is going to happen very soon. She would be a much more capable replacement for an NBA team than just recycling another one of those names that we've heard 100 times.
I don't argue at all with giving an opportunity at having some fresh blood in the NBA coaching circles and in the coaching circles as a whole. You have some of the rules in terms of what kind of candidates, how many you have to interview, different types of things in the NFL, those types of situations. So it almost seems to me like more of an old boys society type of thing that there aren't more women in these roles already. So I think that hopefully in the next few years, some of these sports will catch up with it. And hopefully the NBA can be right at the front of that. I think that the NBA has a chance to be a very progressive league in a lot of this stuff with Adam Silver as the commissioner now. I think that he looks like a much more latitudinarian, open-minded type of person than his predecessor, David Stern. I didn't think too much of him, to be perfectly honest. And I really like what Adam's done so far. And so hopefully the NBA can be on the right side of history with all this stuff, because trying to keep women out of these positions is going to be, you're going to be on the wrong side of history if you're taking those types of viewpoints.
Agreed. Hey, and speaking of Adam Silver and sort of the progression that the NBA is making, we didn't talk about this earlier. I just want to get your opinion on this. The NBA in the future potentially going to Las Vegas. Do you have an opinion on that? Do you have a thought on that?
You know, I don't have a problem with it at all. If it seems really easy, like a logical step that the NBA could expand to 32 teams, and Seattle could get a team back, Las Vegas could get a team back. Obviously, there's, you know, some other different scenarios, but 32 teams in a lot of ways makes more sense than 30 teams. The NBA product is, you know, selling very well right now. It's very popular, second in the country behind the NFL. It's past the Major League Baseball, ran right past them, isn't looking back. So I don't have any problem with that. I don't think that, like in the old days, there was the taboo with gambling and everything like that. And I think it's just the opposite. I mean, right now with the way Las Vegas and all that has worked, they don't want people fixing anything. They're very happy with the way the system works, and they'd be the first ones to probably notify the league if something was shady was going on. So I don't have any problem with that at all. I think that I think that's a very good idea for expansion.
I agree, and I think we're going to see it happen eventually. You know, the paperwork's been submitted. It's going to happen as far as Las Vegas getting a NHL team, and I think that after the NBA, of course, they already have a couple of events in Las Vegas. I think after the NBA has an opportunity to see how the NHL does, how successful I think they'll be anyway, that's really going to open the door, and I think that's something that's going to happen in the future.
Okay, NHL teams, just that you mentioned on. Okay, I was going to tell you real quick about the thing with the Coyotes their lease agreement. So basically there was a somewhat obscure clause in the Coyotes lease agreement where they were not allowed to hire a certain person that they did to do any work within the organization. That person was employed in a small capacity by the team, and the city of Glendale used that as grounds to attempt to terminate the lease agreement. Now, the city of Glendale has been this intransigent type of source in a lot of things sports related. They have had a big problem with the NFL, with the Super Bowl. And even with this being a great destination for the Super Bowl, all of the Super Bowl events were held in Phoenix and Scottsdale when the Super Bowl was just here because of the city of Glendale's posturing. they're just not easy to work with at any level. That situation was worked out. The Coyotes agreed to a different deal where the city of Glendale's paying them less yearly, and the Coyotes get to keep all of the stadium related revenue, and they have that kind of hashed out. But the Coyotes have an opt-out 2 years from now, and it seems like that's kind of a good time frame for them to find a new home, because long term I don't think that's going to work with the city of Glendale, which is obviously kind of bad for the city of Glendale too, because they have Westgate and this stadium and all this stuff. And city of Glendale, they've come to terms that they made a bad investment, so city of Glendale screwed this up. But as far as the Suns are concerned, do you think that the Suns should try to capitalize on the city of Glendale's misfortune with the Coyotes' untenable situation to try to turn this into a new joint arena for the Suns and Coyotes to share?
Absolutely, because, I mean, this sounds like, and you know the situation better than I do, but this sounds like the definition of a mutually beneficial agreement. It helps the Suns get into a new arena, and clearly the long-term future of the Coyotes is not in Glendale. So I think if something can be worked out, and you know what, the Coyotes might need this agreement just to keep the team in Arizona. We talked about the NHL expansion, and it looks like they're going to be expanding to Las Vegas, and it looks like there's a fairly good chance they're going to be expanding to Quebec City. But there are other cities that are looking for NHL franchises, mostly Seattle, and the Coyotes may need an agreement like this just to stay in Arizona. And if that gets the Suns into a new home too, I think it's a mutually beneficial agreement.
Even though the arena is just a little over 20 years old, with the way technology has progressed, everything that is a little bit dated in terms of the, I guess, shelf life of an arena, a modern arena. There's still the way things unraveled with the Coyotes, and with some of the overall complications with trying to get public funding for sports stadiums. To a certain extent, I don't know where I stand on some of that. Some studies show that they don't really benefit anybody except the owners of the teams that get to make all this money off the backs of the taxpayers. So as far as that goes, but personally, I like being a four sports city. I like having the Coyotes here. I'll definitely be attending games at the arena, watching the Suns play there, and being able to benefit from the amenities. It'd be nice if the ownership groups can find a way to absorb some of the cost. I know I was looking at something with some of the NFL stadiums recently, and well over half of the last 10 stadiums that were built, well over half of them was privately funded. So there's been a lot of private funding with some of that stuff. So hopefully maybe something like that can materialize to where it makes it a possibility, because I think if they can pony up some of the money, then that, obviously that makes it an easier sell. Next thing we'll go to here real quick, and we kind of talked about this with the bench a little bit, and you said, hey, I don't care if we have five guys I've never heard of, if they can take us to the playoffs. But Ryan McDonough, you've listed in here as an element of surprise, that Ryan McDonough says he's got people telling him that we have no idea what you guys are doing. You, it seems like, think that that's maybe more of a good thing from what you were saying earlier, the element of surprise?
Yeah, I do. And by the way, just to give you the full quote from Ryan, a lot of teams, you read the media reports. Sorry about that. I'm reading it. A lot of teams, you read the media reports and you can kind of tell what they're doing or what they want to do. I've got a few people telling me, we have no idea what you guys are doing. I don't know if that's a compliment or not, but we do value the element of surprise. It's all about tone of voice there. You have somebody tell you, we have no idea what you guys are doing. That's not a good thing. But I think that, I think that it's a good thing, in that the way I interpreted it was, there's nothing's off the table with the Suns. If they can make the team better, nothing's off the table. and I like exploring all options. I like being very creative and things like that. And if that means that the teams kind of don't know exactly what we're doing all the time, I'm okay with that too.
He's been hard to read. It's not like anybody here locally has been sort of a Nostradamus predicting what Ryan McDonough is going to do. Tyson Chandler came out of left field. That wasn't somebody that I had heard the Suns link to or I had figured they'd be chasing at the beginning of the free agent period. I never heard of Sonny Weems until the Suns signed him. Never heard of him. You know, these other guys, John Luehr, Mirza Teletovic, you know, obviously I know who these guys were, but wasn't, you know, in a situation where I knew that they were on the Suns' radar. I think as in terms of their general plan, as they went into the offseason, the Suns said that they realized that they had really lacked veteran leadership, had discounted the value of that in their signings last year. And so I think they've got a little bit more of that. So you can see that, you know, they've tried to correct some of these mistakes from last year and built a little bit better team chemistry and just a team that complements each other with the pieces a little bit more than they had last year. So I guess individually some of the moves have an element of surprise, but there hasn't been any necessarily earth-shattering, you know, huge trade this offseason, this summer. So some of the names are a little bit surprising, but I think the overall concept hasn't shocked me. At least as far as that's concerned, Keith, has the overall direction of the summer kind of been what you expected?
Well, yeah, with the LaMarcus Aldridge thing my emotions were so all over the place with that because his name came up and I thought, oh, there's no way. LaMarcus Aldridge he's not coming to Phoenix. And then the more you read and the more you hear, it sort of becomes, I talked myself into it. I was like, oh my gosh, this is a very real possibility. And then when it came down to it and it ended up being San Antonio, I found myself thinking, why did you ever think that was going to happen, that he was ever going to go to Phoenix? So that it sort of had my emotions all over the place. I'm very surprised by some of the things that the Suns do too. Tyson Chandler was out of nowhere. I like that. I like that signing, by the way. So that was kind of out of nowhere. So I have it would not be accurate for me to say I expected it to go this way, but that does not mean that I'm not pleased with the way things have gone. We just obviously haven't had the splash that we thought we were going to have this summer, or that we've kind of been talking about the past few seasons as far as, you know, making a splash in the summer in free agency.
Okay, let's segue straight from there. Then you linked to an ESPN Insider article that gave the Suns a B for their offseason. What are your overall thoughts about the offseason? How do you think the Suns did?
I'll say a B is fair. You know, you get LaMarcus Aldridge. That's an A, obviously. But outside of that, I'll call it a B. And I think that Devin Booker's performance in Las Vegas is sort of what it might have been a little bit lower B minus, but I was so pleased with what I saw from Devin Booker in Las Vegas that I'll call it a B. And then, you know what, as far as re-signing Brandon Knight, I kind of thought that would happen, but I really liked hearing after he re-signed that he, and I forget what the exact quote was, but he said something like, it was a no-brainer. Like, I was waiting for the first minute, and I was going to resign and be a Phoenix Sun. He seems genuinely excited to be with the Suns. I don't know if that necessarily influences an offseason grade. I'm just saying I liked hearing that whenever he resigned.
Real quick with him, do you think Brandon Knight, I think that is a bonus, a boon for the Suns to get that taken care of and not have to deal with another protracted negotiation session like they did the previous summer. I think that really had some negative impacts on the rest of the offseason and bled into next season. So does Brandon Knight, is that the guy that the Suns are pointing to be the leader for this team? Is that the guy that's maybe best suited for that role?
I would think so. I mean, the job's open. Last season, it really felt like there wasn't a defined leader on the court. And I said this before, I think playing without a leader, you might as well be playing with four guys on the court. It's this team really needs somebody to look to, particularly when they got down. And I think Brandon Knight, yeah, I think he can be that guy. I think Tyson Chandler has a lot of those qualities, but I don't know that he's necessarily going to be the leader. One of those reasons is because he's obviously been injury prone in the past, and you don't know. Obviously, we hope he's on the court quite a bit, but if he's somebody who goes down, then we're at the situation that we were at last year, where everybody's just kind of looking around for who's the go-to guy. So, yeah, I think Brandon Knight can be that guy. And you know what? I think he wants to be that guy. I think that's sort of what I read into his statements after he re-signed with Phoenix. It sounds like he's very excited to be here, really wants to be a Sun. I think he wants to be a leader.
Okay, let me ask you this question then, and I'll wrap this back into my thoughts on the summer. The last thing you had here, can the Suns compete in a loaded Western Conference next season? Do you think the moves that they've made have them in a position to be a playoff team next season? Because I think that the team has pretty explicitly made that their goal next season, is to be back in the playoffs and not miss for a sixth straight season.
Sure. Well, okay, so the article that you're making reference to is literally, the headline is, can the Suns compete? The answer to can the Suns compete is absolutely. They can compete to be a playoff team. Are they a playoff team? Man, it's really, really close. I'm going to say that, yes, I do think that this is a playoff team. And I base that on a couple of things. Now, that's assuming that Markieff Morris, even if he's with the team, is not the distraction that he was last year. That assumes that Tyson Chandler's healthy, and that assumes that what we spoke about earlier, that Brandon Knight kind of steps up and assumes that leadership role with the Suns. But I'll say they're a playoff team.
I think that the Suns this offseason, I think that the goal is to get back into the playoffs, and the ultimate goal is to get back to contending for championships. And I don't know that the Suns really got any closer to that this summer. I think that the Tyson Chandler signing is not something that is long-term a thing that's going to help the Suns compete. I think the way the team is being constructed, the logical progression right now, unless something accelerates it, is that by the time some of these guys are hitting their primes, that Chandler is going to be coming off the bench or gone. I think that the rest of the guys that they brought in to fill in, to spackle and stucco patch around this team with Teletovich and Weems and Ronnie Price, those guys are just spare parts, that they're not part of a long-term goal, a long-term build. So I don't think that the team added anything. And you know, maybe a couple years from now, and Devin Booker is 18 years old, so 7 years from now he'll be 25, and maybe he can be part of the Suns' plan at that point. But I don't think that they made any moves that got them closer. They didn't bring on another 23, 24, 25-year-old player that's going to be a big piece of this moving forward. And I'm with you. I don't know whether this is a playoff team either. And if it comes down to it, and a year from now we're talking about the player that the Suns picked with the 13th pick in the 2016 draft, then I don't know how you can look at this in hindsight and say, oh, yeah, the Suns had a good summer. So
sure.
Without knowing it, I it's hard. I don't know grades, and I'm obviously kind of sidestepping the issue, but I'm saying that the Suns, it seemed like a very average offseason, because there's nothing there that I can look at and point at right now and say, you know, that's a move that really accelerated this rebuild, and that's going to get the Suns back to being where they can contend. Instead, they're still a fringe playoff team, just like they were a couple years ago after Ryan McDonough made some moves and the Suns kind of caught fire and really surprised us. So now it looks like 2 years after that, the Suns might be 6 years out of the playoffs and might be, you know, right in that same range as they were. So, and overall, the shape of the team is better, I think, than it was then, but it's just, it's more of an incremental potential improvement than it is something marked, something that you can point
sure.
at really, that's very tangible, that you can see this is why the Suns are obviously in a better position and moving in the right direction. So
what would you like to see moving forward that would, you know, make you more prone to say that this is a playoff team, or a little bit better than a fringe playoff team?
I mean, with the way the roster is now, like the biggest questions for me are just how this bench is going to perform and whether the team can hit 3-point shots, because I think that they have defensive potential, which is kind of surprising for the Suns. And I think that the center spot might actually be a strength to the team, because I think if Chandler and Len can stay healthy, then that's two, legitimate defensive presences that really deter penetration and guard the paint. And so I think the Suns can be good there, but if they can't shoot the three, and if this bench turns out to be as threadbare as I'm afraid it might be, then I don't think they will be a playoff team. And I mean, that's like the big stumbling block for them. If they can do that, I think then that helps them build momentum, and then maybe by next summer they can continue to be better at recruiting players, because they've been close. But I think that you lose a lot of that kind of momentum, and you start treadmilling. You start treadmilling, and eventually the team has to stop picking at the back end of the lottery. So they either need to get better, or need to get worse, and right now they've just been in stasis. So that's what
Sure.
I'd like to see. And a big trade can change things in a moment. And just like we had talked about, maybe Markieff Morris, we find a different landing spot for him. Something. I just the Suns didn't get like the 23, 24, 25-year-old type of young blossoming player, and they missed out on Aldridge, which obviously would have fit the bill as that Richter scale type of movement. So it seemed like small moves. And if the Suns had got Tyson, like 25-year-old Tyson Chandler, then I'd be raving and saying, "Well, this was a great offseason." But they got the
Right.
33-year-old Chandler, which isn't a big piece moving forward. It's a temporary bandage. So. Let's close out with this, because you had a link to this, and you actually talked to me about this real quick. Have you ever been asked out on a date by a female ticket rep from a team before?
No, and I'm upset because evidently that's something that you get with the Phoenix Suns. I was an Anaheim Angels season ticket holder. We don't say Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. Anaheim Angels season ticket holder for 4 seasons. All of my ticket reps were female. Never once was I asked out by my ticket rep.
I was actually asked down to the arena a couple years ago, and called up by one of the Suns employees, and they were looking at trying to get people on as season ticket holders. And when they called, and I explained to them, "Hey, I write for Bright Side of the Sun. I cover the team." And they're like, "Oh, that's okay. You can still come down." And I'm like, "Well, hey, if I do, is it okay if I come down, and write about, the experience that the Suns are bringing on with their fans and everything?" And so I came down and did that. And this was the summer after Grant Hill had just left the team, and Lon Babbie had made the comments about how he'd be, very disappointed if Hill did leave and wasn't a member of the team. And they were in the middle of some trade discussions and stuff at that point. And I think that after the fact that Lon Babbie wasn't necessarily too happy with me that I did report on the situation, because something that he had kind of shared in there was something that he was thinking was kind of off the record. But so he wasn't too happy with me about writing about that. But even though I had declared myself to the ticket rep and everything, but it wasn't like a date, like candlelight dinner, anything like that.
Sure.
And so that's what I think. I would definitely say that, even more than trying to go for the lunch, something like that, if one of the Suns' female ticket reps wants to invite me to a nice romantic dinner, and I'll be completely transparent with my wife about it too. But
Okay.
that would
Now
definitely be a
I
perk. That's a selling point.
Oh, sure. Now I appreciate that. But the article that you're making reference to, and just real quick, I'll read the email for you that the Suns ticket rep sent to a woman who was inquiring about or new to the area. Suns ticket rep sent this email to a woman regarding tickets, and it reads, "I wanted to reach out and introduce myself as your new contact with the Phoenix Suns. I don't know if you live in the area, but I would love to grab lunch or dinner and just get to know you better and hear about what you do. I've been working with the Suns for about a year now, and I'm always looking to network and get to know professionals in the Valley. Would you be available to meet within the next 2 weeks?" Now, we know that you'd be okay with it, but if the Suns ticket rep sends that email to your wife, what's your reaction?
Oh, I think I'd want to get some free tickets from the Suns too over the innocuous email. Yeah, I'd wonder. I mean, with what Facebook stalking and everything like that. Yeah. So, my wife's not a big Suns fan though, so they
Gotcha.
wouldn't be. It'd definitely be the female ticket rep getting with me, I think. And you know,
Well,
even
for what
if a
it's
male
worth,
ticket rep, if a male ticket rep wants to buy me lunch or dinner, then I could probably get on board with that too. So.
well, for what it's worth, the husband did get the tickets, and the son's employee, it says the son's told TMZ that he's a new guy straight out of college, and this is a coaching moment for an otherwise hardworking staffer. So really, everybody wins. Husband gets tickets, and the employee, it was a coaching moment, so he wasn't disciplined for that.
Okay, and so it's dinner on the Suns. I
That's
like.
right.
Okay, well, hey Keith, I want to thank you for coming on. I think that's a lot of really good information. Thanks for all your hard work covering the Summer League, everything. Thanks for your work on the site with Solar Flares, everything else you do here. You got anything else that you want to share with the listeners before we head out of here?
Solar Flares every Tuesday morning. Make sure you read it.
Okay, that's right, everybody. Solar Flares, lots of good stuff on there. Nice links to all things Suns related. Keith's keeping it interesting, obviously, from our discussion even during the slow time, and then it picks up when the season gets ready to rock and roll. Thanks a lot, Keith. I want to thank everyone out there for listening. We'll be back again next week. This is Jim Kochenour, and this was the BS of the Sun podcast.